came out of surgery and he wasn't waking. And I said, you know, they said, you know, we can't really wake him up. And I said, well, if I can wake him up, see, crazy thinking, right? You know, I'm hysterical at this point. I'm just, you know, so grief stricken. And I said, well, if I can wake him up, will you take the tube out? Will you remove the tube, take him, you know, off of this? And they said, well, as long as his oxygen levels don't drop too low, yes, you know. And they looked at me like I was crazy. How was I going to wake him up? And I know this is crazy, Malcolm, and it sounds even crazy. And I bent over him and I said, and I'll never forget this, and I'm sorry if I get emotional. I said, Trey. And I said, Daddy's here. And he woke up. And, you know, his eyes open. Of course, he couldn't speak. He's got a tube down his throat and down, you know. And I said, oh, my gosh, Trey. And then it hit me. I said, are you in pain? And he shook his head, yes. And I felt so horrible at that moment.
The heart and soul of a nation beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor. Honor.
Our soul. Soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
Of a nation.
Of a nation.
Of a nation.
And now, Malcolm.
I want to tell you the story about a young man who went to battle in Afghanistan, senior airman Trey Porfirio. He graduated high school 2007, was in the Air Force, just a week after graduation by chance. And it's a fascinating story, what's happened here in his life. And we're going to speak to his dad, Gold Star dad, Carl Porfirio, who also is the author of a very illustrative, interesting book and read that he actually created for his family legacy and his grandson. My Daddy's Heart is Purple. That was in memory of his son. My Daddy's Heart is Purple. It's a beautiful thing, friends, to be patriotic. It's a beautiful thing to be in America. It's a beautiful thing to have our liberty. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to talk about it freely with you all today. It was the 40th president of the United States. In a quote, he said that always has had special meaning to me, as it may very well be to you. Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. That was our 40th president of these United States, Ronald Reagan. Those were profound words that Reagan said. He said a lot of interesting things, but that one spoke to me. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream, he said. It must be fought for, but it must also be protected and handed on for them to do the same. Now, what's interesting about that quote today, friends, is the part where he says, handed on for them to do the same. That's important. When I say to you, here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations, well, that's really what Reagan was saying back then. So we have a responsibility. We have an obligation to pass this freedom, this from one generation to the next. And of course, as each year goes by, as each decade moves forward, and as America grows more and more mature in its growth, that freedom will be questioned from time to time. It's going to continue to be questioned because at some point, the concern is, will each generation continue to pass it on to the next generation? And if not, where does that stop? When is the moment that freedom stops in America? And you almost stop a moment and think of that profound question. You think, what does it sound like? You know, what does that sound like to us, to our ears, when freedom stops in America? Well, many of you can see right at this very moment, as we see a worldwide pandemic sweep the globe. So it doesn't matter whether you're living in a poor country or a third world country, or whether you're living in the bright, beautiful United States or some European country, Middle East country. But this is the great equalizer, isn't it now? And you get a sense to see how their freedom can be stripped away. So our freedom here in the States can easily be lost just as well as somebody's freedom in another country. All too often, we forget the value of freedom because we take it for granted, people. And that's one of the first mistakes that we make, is we take it for granted. Now, what happens in the day-to-day here, we get lost with the usual shuffle and the disputing and the arguing and the fighting about who we are and I'm right, you're wrong. Within all of those conversations, it gets lost. And we forget that there's a common bond that connects Americans, that connects the people here. That bond often is lost. We get too much in the trenches of Democrat, Republican, left, right, socialism, capitalism. We get lost in all of that. We get lost with the fact of the common thread of what it takes and what that cost is to be an American. You know, I'm here to tell you today that freedom is not free. It's never been free. We hear that sometimes, but do we really understand what that means, the cost of freedom? And there is a cost of freedom. You know, I have such incredible respect for our military. I always have. My brother served in the military. My father served in the military. I did not serve in the military. And you know, the truth of it is, if I had to do it all over again, I probably would serve in the military. Now, why didn't I back then? I didn't feel the calling or the need at that moment. We weren't in any special moment. We weren't in war. There was nothing calling me. And I felt a need to do other things in my life, so I went on to do them. But there is something unique, something special about our brothers and sisters in the military that I find. And oftentimes I find myself a common bond with them, and that is the love for America and the willingness to lay your life down for that love. That's an incredible feeling. And I understand that. Often when we drill down, we understand what America stands for. When we say we love that shining city on a hill, America is a beacon. It's a beacon of hope. And it is a beacon of hope around the globe. People look at America, for the most part, as that beacon. And we should never lose sight of that here as Americans, that hope that we put out there. And we do lose sight of it, especially in times like this. We often forget the value of what that means, that liberty that our brothers and sisters from a different era long ago fought for. And the numbers are staggering, the people who have laid down their lives so that you and I can breathe freely today. And that's a commitment, friends, that only an American understands what that freedom is. And so I'm often reminded when we go through a situation like we're going through right now with a global pandemic as to the value of that freedom that so many have lost right now because of this current state, this great equalizer, if you will. And I hear the calls and the hollow, the winds and the people who are struggling with all of this. And part of that reason is, I think, is that we're in a system where people use their power to control other people, to ask nothing, to expect nothing, to depend on nothing. Now, that's clearly an Ayn Rand quote. I mean, you can see the words there. I mean, there is something about that. that if we each take care of ourselves and we each take care of our own business and we have that independence, we tend to grow stronger as a unit, as a country. I think that makes sense. It should make sense to you. And I think Ayn Rand said that so well, to ask nothing, to expect nothing, to depend on nothing. And really, at the end of the day, isn't it really that you have to depend on yourself? I mean, isn't that really the way it should be? And then we have this struggle in America that we're experiencing right now, where that struggle is, we're at different ends of that, because there are so many that are lost and forgot what freedom is, what our ancestors fought for, and they forget that. And then they want to depend on others because they do expect something. They ask for everything. They expect everything, and they depend on big government. That's a struggle we have right now, that we all can see this right now in our politics and our everyday life, this struggle for the republic, for the future of the republic. And it really all comes back to the simple fundamental point of freedom that I share with you. I think in a lot of ways, Ayn Rand had it right. Because if we become stronger as individuals, then we raise society. We don't have to expect. We don't have to ask. We don't have to expect. We don't have to depend. I mean, those are key words: ask, expect, depend. In their words, that what that means is it's a captivated audience. Those people who do ask, who do expect, who do depend, become really the slaves to society, you see? And Ayn Rand knew that. They become the slaves to society, to slaves to those people who want to empower other people. And typically, those are people you find in high office and people that have been elected, and it becomes the usual power trip that people get on. And we see this in every walk of life. We're seeing it now. We're seeing it in our communities, in our city parks, and in our towns, from sea to shining sea. And it's an amazing history. It's a rich history, is what it is. And it should never be lost on us, people, ever. Every life matters. And it really matters, people, if it's, especially if it's your life, or if it's your child's life, your son or your daughter's life, or your spouse, your sister or brother, a very dear friend. Well, then that really matters, doesn't it, at that point, yeah? And that's a way to look at it, because sometimes we have these conflicts we do as a country, and you compare them to other conflicts, and you don't think, well, that one really didn't matter. Looking at some of these numbers, you take Iraq, for instance, Operation Iraqi Freedom, 4,489 up to this moment here have died, paid the ultimate price, you see. In Afghanistan, just approaching 2,400 in Afghanistan. And there are others, like you take like this NATO air campaign in Yugoslavia, 1999, only 20. And you say only, and that bothers me, the word only. And I have a problem with that, because it should never be only. If it's just one person on there, again, that could be your loved one. That could be the most precious one in your life. That's an important life compared to a war that maybe tens of thousands died. You see? And so, and I think it's a stark reminder of the value of each and every single life and the cost that people give for freedom. Would you give up your life for freedom? I mean, would you sacrifice your life for freedom? And, you know, you think about it in those terms, and then you begin to really understand, people, that, you know, there is no bigger sacrifice. There is no bigger commitment. There's nothing else I can give you. There's no possession. There's no secret. There's nothing I could do that would equal the value of if I said, you know what? I'm willing to give my life and I'll serve in combat. And I'll serve to protect that liberty here for the United States. Think about that in those terms, and then you really get a perspective of the value of our freedom, the value of our liberty that we cherish, so many of us cherish and understand. I mean, it should not be lost on a single one of us. And over the years, through these wars we've had, you know, the Persian Gulf War, you remember, 1991, 258 casualties. Panama, 40. You see, you take a look at something like Panama, 40. Some people say, well, that's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. Every single life matters. Vietnam War, I just seen reports in the last couple of days that the numbers through the COVID-19 business, now those casualties have now surpassed the Vietnam War. But friends, there are a lot of things that happen in this country that cause death that would surpass the Vietnam War, which, by the way, was 58,209. But there were a lot of things that happened here that would surpass that number. But I did see the headlines, and the media was trying to drive the point home. Now, to some, that headline would be fearful, because people take that out of context. They say, oh my God, we've now, more people have died from this. It must be a serious disease. And then back to liberty. No, well, I'm willing to give up my liberty and no more freedom for as long as they tell me that I will stay locked down. And then you have to ask yourself, are you willing to die for this freedom? You know, the Korean War, 36,516 casualties. And World War II, 405,399. Interesting how that ended at 399. I find that fascinating. It's not 405,400, but it's 399. That tells you the value of one life. Take a look at that. I mean, if you think about it in those terms, that could be 405,400, but it's 405,390. There's something about that drives the point home that I'm explaining to you, that every life matters. And there it is right there. In comparison from World War II to World War I, World War I, 116,516 lost their lives, sacrificed their lives, really, you know. But the biggest is the American Civil War, 625,000. And that's an approximate, because we really didn't know the pinpoint number. There was so much bloodshed in 1861, in 1862, 63, 64, and 65, that we really don't know what that real number is. But it's approximated at 625,000. And the reason I bring that up, it is the most death of any war we've had, because it's important to mention the internal conflict that our country was going through. And there's a lot of talk these days about conflict. There's a lot of talk about our internal struggles as a country as we continue to grow up and grow older. You know, at 243 years, almost 244 years old now, right? I mean, we're no longer a young little teenager. We're becoming a mature country now. And the stakes are even more expensive. I mean, because as you see, as I say to you often, you see historically the countries that fade out, just like a star in the distant universe that fades out and sizzles to nothing. And that's a problem that historically mankind has had with countries. They fizzle out. They become nothing. And so, as I say to you all the time, is America the exception to that rule? As I say, we're just a generation away from being extinct here. And we're seeing that now today more than we've ever seen it before. But there's something about that American Civil War that makes me think, because it was an internal struggle. We did it to ourselves, and yet we killed, most people died. Most of our young men and women and soldiers died in that battle and that struggle in the American Civil War back in the 1860s. And you think about that in the terms of where we are now and the struggles we're having, and there are a lot of conversations about the fact that we're headed toward another civil war. People feel that way, or there's a sense about that. And then people ask themselves, are you willing to die for your country? Are you willing to die for that freedom? Certainly a lot of people here have died over the years for our freedom, my friends. George Orwell, 1984. He said, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. Think about that for a minute. And there are people who would believe that right now, that war is peace. That is the only way toward peace is to be in war. And certainly the industrial military complex believes in that theory. They also believe it that it builds their wallet, their coffers, if you will. Freedom is slavery. They are in the process of convincing the masses that freedom is indeed slavery, that perhaps they have another path forward, a better way, a Karl Marx way. And ignorance is strength. And this is the biggest danger of all right there that Orwell said. And that's that you leave it all to the betters, to the government gurus, to the political leaders, to the others who've been elected to high office to make the decisions for you. And sadly, there are a great many of people. In fact, there are millions upon millions of Americans who have fallen into that third camp of understanding and believing that ignorance is strength. They believe they can't make a difference. They believe they're just a small voice in a big world, and why should they bother? AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Senior Airman Trey Porfirio, and it was in 2007 he graduated high school, this young man. It was just, what, Carl, a week later that he was in the Air Force. Pretty quick after graduation, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah. He didn't get any summer vacation. He went straight in.
That 1 week time, what was the drive in him to do that so quickly?
Well, actually, my son, he always wanted to serve in some capacity, always. And so we actually were signed in. I had to sign him in at the age of 17. We went and saw the recruiters. We went to the different military recruiters. And then he chose the Air Force. And I told the recruiter, I said, look, you better find my son a good job. I don't want him going in as an MP. I want him to have a good job. And he called a few months later. He was already actually signed in. Mm-hmm. And we called a few months later and said, oh, I have a great job for Trey. Get down here. Sign the papers. We did. And, of course, he had to turn 18. He had to graduate high school. Well, they just called him right up. A week after, he said, "Dad, they called me. I got to go." And I'm like, "Wow, you didn't even get a break, did you?"
That's what I'm wondering, because some people take time between high school and sometimes college, or high school and service or whatever. Did you have any reservations at that time when he went in that quickly?
Well, it's funny. I'm a dad, and we're supposed to be strong and tough, and mm-hmm. I'm a single dad. And we were very, very close. And I was like, oh, I'm not ready to give him up this quick. But, when the Air Force calls, the Air Force calls, and you have to go. I mean, he was signed in. And, I was with him every step of the way, to MEPS, where they get inducted and all that sort of thing. And that's just the way it is. And then you don't get to speak to your kid, really, while they're, in training. And then I did get a call from him one day while he was in training, and which I was very excited. I had to pull over the side of the road to keep the signal. You know, I was in Florida as well, and right by the ocean where the signal goes in and out, as you well know. Mm-hmm. And so I pulled over, and he said, I said, how am I getting to speak to you? He said, well, Dad, I made a bargain with the sergeant or whatever. He said, I'm mopping the floor in exchange for a phone call. So I was very flattered that he used that phone call to call dear old Dad. And I was very excited, but that's just the way it is. You know?
And no, that's good. And that tells you the value of family right there at that moment, you know, when he calls good old Dad. That's exactly what that is. He volunteered, as I understand now, to deploy to Afghanistan in the fall of 2009. Yes?
Correct. Yes. And yes, he did volunteer for that mission. Yes.
So he didn't have to go.
No, not to Afghanistan. I mean, he was going to deploy somewhere. I think he said originally it was Japan, and he traded off some other guy and let him go to Japan somehow. And he volunteered for this mission.
Now let's dive into that, what you say, because what comes to my mind right away, Carla, says that one decision that he made at that moment, and it never escapes me how one decision in our lives can change everything. And I say this all the time because it's so accurate, and I think people lose sight of that. But one decision you make in your life can change everything. And back then, in 2009, this changed his life, because Carl, had he made a different decision, he might still be here today.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's the power of one decision. Just important. And when I say one decision, Carl, I'm speaking about any decisions we make in our lives, whether it's, you know, those big moments of getting married, the decision to go to college, the decision to get into a particular career, the decision to move to another state, move to another country. Those kinds of decisions are critical decisions. And although it's only one decision, that one decision will change everything in your life, you see?
Absolutely.
I'm fascinated with that, really. And here it is here with Trey, that one decision, because had he said, well, no, I'm not going to go to Afghanistan, let the other guy go, and he went to Japan or somewhere else, it'd been a whole different story.
Yes. A whole different story.
Absolutely. But you know, there's something about this here, Carl, that I want to say to you, that things happen the way they're supposed to happen. I believe that. Do you believe that?
Yes and no. So I mean, if you're talking manifest destiny, I've never been a big fan of manifest destiny. But I guess you're right in a way. Everything's meant to happen for a reason.
Everything happens for, please trust that information that you just hear, because right. I believe it's accurate. Everything happens for a reason.
For a reason.
The world takes shape as people come and go and as life continues forward. And it says a lot. I mean, what our future risks are, what our future successes are, or tragedies as a people, you know. Back in Afghanistan, it was fall of 2009 that he arrived in Afghanistan, as I understand it. What I want to know is this. I know he was shot three times, Trey was, young Trey, in the back at close range by an insurgent. Yes. Who then escaped and so on, as I understand. But here's the thing I want to ask you. How far from 2009 fall in Afghanistan to this three shots in the back did that happen, please?
Oh, yes. It was November 21st, 2009.
So it was pretty quick with him being there. He's only there a short time.
Right. He was just there a couple months. Absolutely.
So he got shot in the back, close range, again, by an insurgent, and Trey was airlifted to Germany.
Correct.
Okay. And then he was at, and then stateside, as you say, to Walter Reed Medical Center. And what happened is, as I understand in looking at the story, that he was shot so badly, and was it his pancreas that got pretty shot up?
Yes. You know, when people look at him, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, he's got his arms and his legs and his eyes and, mm-hmm. and, but it was, you know, between his neck and his torso, that was the parts that were missing. And he lost his pancreas, his spleen, his part of his intestines, part of his stomach, his gallbladder, not to mention the skin. I don't want to gross out your listeners or anything, but I finally learned what the true meaning of exit wounds meant. You know, I had no, and I'm a nurse. I'm a former nurse, and I had no idea what exit wounds from bullets were. You know, you see things in the movies, you see certain things, but when you see it in real life, and your child's torso is being held together with a piece of plastic, but because there's no longer any skin there, it brings on a whole different perspective. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, there's a real interesting turn to the story, because he had first of all, it was life-saving surgery, but it was also one of a kind. It was experimental surgery, but it was kind of a historical moment because it impacted the world of diabetes. But before that, Carl, during that struggle now from Germany to Walter Reed, what were the struggles for young Trey? As you just described it, with the pancreas and the spleen and the intestines. And now I've got a pretty good sense and a feel in here, as listeners should also have, that this is serious stuff. I mean, if you've lost your spleen and your intestines, and it's life altering at the very minimum, and it's life endangerment at the worst. I mean, it can be death. How did he struggle and deal with that during that time?
Well, they gave him propofol, which put him in a sort of a shallow coma, and to keep him calm, to keep him steady. He was on a ventilator as well. Like I said, I was just in total shock because I wasn't expecting to see what I saw when I got to Walter Reed. And I was told, oh, he's stable, he's this, he's the usual charma that they give you, and I got there and it was just much, much, much worse than I thought. Now this also, this made him he's a brittle diabetic. One of his ureters, which connects the kidney to the bladder, one of those were severed. So, there's urine leaking into the body cavity. There's, infection. Infection is your number one enemy of any kind of surgery, of any kind of trauma to the body, is infection. People don't realize that. It's like, we fixed grandma, but she's 80 and she's going to die from this infection. And a lot of people, that was my biggest fear, knowing as a nurse, that's what we had to deal with every day. These wounds becoming infected, and losing more parts, more organs. I just didn't know if his body could handle all that. Like I said, it was God's grace. I don't know why. I've questioned it for all these years. Why he survived that day, he should not have survived that day.
Well, that's exactly it. He could have died on the battlefield, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And probably should have, based on what you've said and what you've drawn out, but he didn't. And what that means is, when you go through that kind of pain, and you go through those kinds of struggles, they're life-altering for sure, and you don't give up. That just talks about perseverance.
Absolutely. He must have had some strong will. I mean... And he was in a lot of pain. Of course, he was on morphine the entire time, keeping him stable, keeping him out of pain. But yet he was coherent. I was in shock. I was baffled. I get to Walter Reed. He's basically in a coma. But I woke him up. I woke him up, and I regretted that. Malcolm, I regretted that every day of my life.
Because of the pain?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, okay. I was thinking selfishly as a father. I was thinking, he's going to die tonight or whatever. I'm never going to hear him again. I remember saying he was intubated. So, which makes him breathe for people that don't know that, and on oxygen. And, he wasn't awake. He came out of surgery and he wasn't waking. And I said, they said, we can't really wake him up. And I said, well, if I can wake him up, sweet, crazy thinking, right? I'm hysterical at this point. I'm just, so grief stricken. And I said, well, if I can wake him up, will you take will you take the tube out? Will you remove the tube, take him, you know, off of this? And they said, well, as long as his oxygen levels don't drop too low, yes. You know, and they looked at me like I was crazy. How was I going to wake him up? And I know this is crazy, Malcolm, and it sounds even crazy. And I bent over him and I said, and I'll never forget this, and I'm sorry if I get emotional. I said, Trey. And I said, Daddy's here. And he woke up. And, you know, his eyes open. Of course, he couldn't speak. He's got a tube down his throat and down, you know. And I said, oh, my gosh, Trey. And then it hit me. I said, are you in pain? And he shook his head, yes. And I felt so horrible at that moment. And I even asked the medical team. I said, can you put him back asleep? And they said, no, we can't do that. We can't put him back in a coma. We can't do that. And, you know, it was just too dangerous for him. And, you know, but then I guess the morphine kicked in. He seemed to stabilize a little bit, and they did pull the tube. Now he couldn't talk more than a whisper. You know, it was just a whisper. And, you know, I told him he was back in the United, you know, back in the United States in a hospital. And he just seemed to be taking it all in. And, you know, I think he was just happy I was there, I guess. And his fiance was there, but she didn't really speak to him or anything. I don't think he was really aware of her at that time. You know, so he was just aware of me.
And you have felt very guilty about waking him up all these years, haven't you?
Yes.
And I said, yes. That still weighs heavily on you, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. But Carl, at the same time, I will say to you this, understand. I mean, any father would understand, would want to see their son and have the tube out and make the connection. And I think it's perfectly legit. I mean, I don't think there's anything odd about that. I think you did what you felt instinctively you should do. And, you know, at the same time, he was able to pull down and he was probably happy and thrilled you woke him up so he could see you and have that connection, you know?
Well, amazingly, he never went back to sleep that night. It was just amazingly he wouldn't go back to sleep.
See?
And I was finally exhausted. You know, he was in and out, kind of in and out. And I didn't want to go to my hotel, my room, whatever. They have a place there, you know, on Walter Reed campus. Mm-hmm. They have a place where parents and family members can stay, but I wouldn't go. I didn't want to leave his bedside, of course. So I went into the waiting room, and they actually have chairs that recline. And the nurses were great. They brought me a blanket and a pillow. And I laid down and I really, really couldn't sleep. I think I may have dozed off for 30 minutes only to have a nurse come and shake me and say, your son wants you. Your son wants you. And so I said, what? And I jumped up and went into the room and he just says, hello, Dad. You know, like, I thought it was something going on, like they needed my immediate attention. And he's like, hi, Dad. You know, and so I sat in a chair at his bedside. Girlfriend was asleep, and I sat there and just kind of talked with him, and you know what I could. I didn't want to take all his energy away, but he just was acted like it was just any other day.
Yeah.
Which just, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, you should never ever feel guilty again about waking him up. It was the right thing to do. And you just said it yourself and his reaction to that. So let's clear the record up right now today. If anything else from this patriotic talk we're having here is that you should never, ever feel guilty again. It was the right thing to do. And as he was in the hospital, young Trey, this went on now, as I understand, for months and months. His healing was right. This was a long journey now.
Very, very long journey. Of course, this was Thanksgiving. He actually had his first surgery, the one that made medical history, on Thanksgiving Day, which was the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to go back to that, I sat in the rain. It was rainy. I remember that. I sat waiting outside. I think a girlfriend was at the Fisher House, and someone took us there, and they said, oh, you know, they're serving food there. Well, when I got there, I don't know, there was no food. I hadn't eaten. I was exhausted, but I couldn't stop thinking about my son. And I was told that he may not survive the surgery, that he was bleeding pretty bad and that, you know, he may not survive it. I was warned. So I went and I kind of sat and I said to God, I said, you know, as I prayed, I said, how appropriate. You know, it's raining. And I thought, well, you know, it's raining. It's kind of appropriate, isn't it? And I guess, I don't know, it was kind of a gloomy day. It wasn't particularly cold in, you know, in Washington, D.C. for some reason that day. But I sat there and I waited for the call that said he made it through the surgery. And he did. So, which I was very grateful that, you know, these surgeons gave up their Thanksgiving day and to perform the surgery. And yes, he had to have many more after that because they had to they actually took his abdomen and sewed, they call it like a Jacob's ladder, and actually kept sewing it together like a corset and bringing it together and stretching to bring it together, you know, because instead of taking a piece from somewhere else and patching it in, which amazed me because Trey was very thin. He was a thin guy. Mm-hmm. And they managed to do that. So I was amazed. You know, because first they told me he would have an artificial piece of skin there. And then it was, no, we're going to do this. And so it's amazing how much the skin stretches, in case anybody wants to know that from a thin person.
Right. Let me tell folks as well that as I was reading more about Trey, out of, I believe, one of the Miami Herald, I think it was, newspaper, possibly. And, I mean, they say, as I remember it, that he was a medical pioneer, they called him, right, Carl? Medical pioneer.
Yes.
So let me explain to folks what that means. So, and I want to read this right from the Miami paper. It says here, his pancreas was riddled by enemy bullets, destroying most of its ability to produce insulin and potentially turning him into an instant full-blown diabetic. But now doctors have removed the insulin-producing islet cells from what was left of the pancreas and transplanted them into his liver, which has taken over the function of producing the insulin. And this is the first time this procedure has been used on a pancreas damaged by injury and rather than being deteriorated from diabetes. And again, because these bullets he took at close range in Afghanistan were, you know, could have and probably should have been life-ending. But I think it goes to the ability to this young man wanting to fight for life and fight to have his life. And that's got to mean something to you, Carl.
Yeah, yes, it does. I mean, yes, he was a fighter. He was a fighter, and he wasn't a complainer. And
exactly.
I never could understand how he just, you know, I mean, he would get cranky. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he would get cranky sometimes, but and the doctors were just all marveling. You know, I hate to put it this way, but he made a lot of doctors famous. He really did. I mean, right. You know, people that didn't know their names the day before now knew these doctors' names. And Dr. Ricordi, who also runs the Diabetes Research Institute and has several offices around the world, you know, his goal, you know, I know Dr. Ricordi, and his goal was to cure diabetes. And he says, I will cure diabetes before I die. You know, people don't realize, you know, people think, oh, well, that's just a manageable disease. But it's an unnecessary disease.
People die from it all the time.
Well, yeah, they die. They, you know, they go blind. They have heart attacks. They lose their limbs. You know, and Trey was now what they would call a brittle diabetic, because not only did it damage his pancreas, see, they removed those cells, like what you read in the thing, they removed those cells first, but he lost his entire pancreas. And the pancreas has other functions besides just producing insulin. It produces enzymes, which aid in digestion. And Trey had to take enzymes every time he ate. He had to actually, you know, take these enzymes first before he could eat.
Yeah.
And he said it just pained him. He said he could feel his food digesting. It pained him. And even that. But he was no longer a diabetic.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And let me remind folks here, we are speaking with Carl Porfirio, and Carl is the dad of Trey Porfirio. And the story of young Trey, as we've been telling you here, we're talking about patriotism and freedom. And here's a young man who volunteered to deploy to Afghanistan in fall of 2009. And again, he was shot three times in the back at close range by an insurgent out there, and then had a struggle of his lifetime. But as Carl, his dad, was just saying, this surgery was made him a medical pioneer. And the doctor, in fact, who was talking about the diabetes, and I want to talk about that more in a moment here, Dr. Ricordi, is interested in the background of this doctor and what's happening in the world of diabetes. Now, I want to remind you, friends, the book, it's called My Daddy's Heart is Purple, and it's on Amazon. It's also in the America Out Loud bookstore right now as I speak to you. And so you can go to the navigation bar right on AmericaOutloud.com. Just click the bookstore, and you'll see his book there. Now, if you don't see it on the front page, there's a search bar there. Just type the word purple in. He'll come right up. Just remember the word purple. Purple heart, yeah? Just type in purple. That book will come right up, and you can purchase it right there for Carl. My Daddy's Heart is Purple. It's a beautiful book. And we'll talk more about that. I encourage you to do that, please, and to honor this young man. And it would be a beautiful thing here. We'll take a quick pause. We'll be back with Carl Porfirio in just a moment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
You know, diabetes is the seventh leading cause of death in the United States. It's costing, well, they say, in excess of $175 billion in healthcare every year. These numbers are pretty accurate, I guess, and it's grown rapidly. And there's a lot of factors in this, people with diabetes. I mean, there are serious health problems. You were hearing Carl just talk about that moments ago, eye, heart, kidney, other organs. But also, even things like right now, we talked about the pandemic up front in the COVID. Those are some of the folks who are struggling with their lives, people that are not healthy otherwise. And diabetes is one of those things that those people are very susceptible to succumbing to this COVID-19 virus disease that is sweeping the world. And there really is something about being healthy and being fit, which is what I tell you all the time out there. It's important we all take care of ourselves. And, you know, Carl, you hear me all the time on the network talk about our health, don't you? You know, and it's so important. If we don't have our health, we have nothing. But listen, we're talking here. I want to introduce you again, friends, to Carl Porfirio, a very dear friend of the program here and a passionate man, as you hear him talking. And, you know, I really wanted to take this story of young Trey and really combine it with freedom and our liberty and patriotism and everything that's American. Because I know, Carl, I believe you are probably as patriotic as Malcolm. You know how patriotic I am.
Absolutely.
I mean, 100%. And we value all of this. And so we value, and we, that's why we have to stop a minute and appreciate and respect somebody like Trey, who makes it all worthwhile. As I went through some of the numbers, aren't those numbers staggering of the people who have given up their life and sacrificed their lives for America, as I was talking about up top of the program, Carl?
Yes. And also I wanted to say with that, you know, you mentioned the casualties, but that didn't even include all the people that lost limbs, traumatic brain injury. I mean, their lives are changed forever. You know, even though they didn't lose their life, their lives are changed forever. Their families' lives are changed forever. That's, you know, because that did, I believe those numbers did only included death. Is that correct?
Those numbers I gave were casualties only. And you bring up a very good point, my friend. And that, no, well, sacrifice comes in many shapes and sizes here, buddy. They have to know our appreciation and value for our military and our law enforcement. We've always have put them in high regards here. You know, they're the reason we do this.
The highest regards.
And I think you feel that with America Out Loud, don't you?
Absolutely, I do. I know that's why I'm so privileged to feel a part of it. And I want to premise to say, Malcolm, I thank you. I mean, you're the one that guides us to keeping our freedom. Amen. And like you said, freedom isn't free. And I have to say myself, I took my freedom for granted. I confess. Mm-hmm. You know, we take our freedom for granted because we're born into it. We're born into it. You know, I wasn't born during the Civil War. I wasn't born, you know, in the midst of World War II. And our children, our grandchildren take this freedom, like you said, for granted. And we, you and I, and everyone listening here have to remind everyone that freedom is not free. You know, men and women have sacrificed greatly for our freedom. And I'll be damned if I'm going to let someone take it away from me now.
I love that about you. You're committed. You're passionate. That's one of the things I know that you are that way. And I so value that. I so appreciate you. Carl, it's important because we've got to take Trey's legacy and we have to move forward with it. You know, we have to, absolutely, right? We have to create, we have to make that legacy count, make it what it is and what Trey wanted it to be, because you have the beautiful feeling inside, Carl, you should have, and I know you do have, of that Trey's life meant everything. I mean, you've got to be so proud.
Yes, I am, and I have. I'm sure I've hurt some other people by saying I'm very fortunate in the fact. Yes, I lost my son, and yes, mm-hmm. it hurts every day, but I'm fortunate in the fact that I can say my son died a hero. My son died defending his country. He didn't die in prison. He didn't die from an overdose of heroin. He didn't, you know, die from alcohol poisoning at a party. You know, so I am fortunate. I feel fortunate in that respect because I can say my son died a hero. And a lot of people just, they don't have the privilege of saying that.
Carl, that's 100% what you say is so important and so valuable. And, you know, looking back at your history and some of the stories and the images, he was a bright kid, but a good looking kid. He had a lot to live for.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, he did. Like, yeah, he did. People tell me that, and people, they especially comment about his smile. And I said, boy, he didn't smile like that at home all the time. But people constantly come in about,
you can see that smile. Radiate from the images. You can see that radiate from the messages. See, that's what I'm talking about. You know,
he was a no nonsense kid. He didn't like nonsense. I mean, he was a funny guy. He had a great sense of humor, but and we were very close, but he didn't like nonsense.
You know, I wish I could have met him because there's something remarkable to me, brother, about this conversation about young Trey. I mean, I can only say to you, I truly get it. And coming on the airwaves today with you, I felt was going to be very special. And I had a really good feeling myself, personally, in delivering this message today. And I really wanted to keep it centered, Carl, about freedom and about our sacrifice. And there's such incredible passion for the men and women who serve in our military and our armed forces. And I don't know that everybody is truly aware, conscious of that commitment, that's such an American feeling. There's something, I know you know what I'm talking about, Carl. There is something truly American, something you can't make this stuff up. It's a magical feeling to be patriotic and to love a country as much as we love America, isn't it?
It is. And I fly my flag every day, and not just on the holidays. I fly my flag every day. And I encourage your listeners, please, they're not that expensive. It takes a couple screws and a post, and please fly your flag every day. Please remind everybody every day that that flag represents what so many men and women died for to keep this country free.
You know, when we started this experiment of America Out Loud, even to hold up the experiment of America, the United States of America, that is, you know, I put right at the top of the platform, here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. That, to me, is the most noble calling we could have, brother. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right? And you know, that's important to me, spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. I often reference those shining seas on the program here. I see it as an important symbolic moment. I also talk quite a bit about the shining city on a hill. But the shining seas from one to the other, I think says something about this beautiful land that America is. America is not an accident. It is an experiment in the condition of humankind I'm talking about, Carl. But it is no accident, you see. Its purpose here is purposeful. And the destiny is what we have to ensure that it accomplishes everything that it should accomplish for mankind. Let's say it out loud here a moment, that Trey Porfirio is a hero.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, yes, he's a hero. Yeah.
He's my hero. He's definitely my hero.
Well, he's your hero and he's America's hero, because here's a young guy, graduated high school in 2007, and 1 week after high school went to serve in the Air Force. And then he volunteered to deploy to Afghanistan in the fall of 2009. And it was only a short bit later, friends, where he was shot 3 times in the back at close range. So listen, the story is profound. And what I need to ask you to do is I want you to share this story when this goes to podcast. You know, this is a story about patriotism and freedom. This is a story about America, and it's a story about young Trey Porfirio. That's what this is a story about. It's a story about heroes. Let's share this story. Let people hear this when it goes to podcast, and let them know that young Trey's life was worthy. It was worthy of our American experience. It was worthy of what I tell you, to secure the next generation, my friends. That's our job. It's our responsibility here to do that. A big thank you to Carl Porfirio. Now that book, My Daddy's Heart is Purple, is on Amazon. It's also in the America Out Loud bookstore as I talk to you right now. You can get to the bookstore on our navigation bar right at AmericaOutLoud.com. This bookstore is just prime full of fantastic books that will inspire and educate. And it is for that purpose. And it's of all leading experts around the globe. A lot of inspirational books in there from our experts on the platform, but also from our guests who adorn this network every day and make America Out Loud. Sing the out loud truth from sea to shining sea, as I say. When you go to the bookstore, just type the word in purple in the search bar, and it'll pop right up if you don't see it automatically on the front page. My Daddy's Heart is Purple. Trey Porfirio, an American hero. Friends, it's worth fighting for. It's time to get involved and get loud.